again.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Tom Bullock in for Mike Collins. What makes a country great? Or better yet, the greatest? Its economy, its innovators, its military, the quality of life of its citizens? Or does all of this wrap into what is seen as a national brand? Today, we look at America and its brand, and whether that brand means America is already great or needs to be made great again. And what about North Carolina's brand after House Bill 2? All of these questions are inherently bumper sticker material and are often talked about by candidates from presidential nominees on down the ballot. But this hour, we're examining these brands not with the words of a political stump speech, but through the eyes of a professor of marketing with the Wharton School of Business, one who made news earlier this year by ranking the 60 greatest countries on the planet using a series of criteria. Professor Dave Riebstein, welcome to Charlotte Talks.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here, Tom.
Now, before we get to the rankings, I want to start with this. Define for us what is a brand and why you think countries need them.
So brands we're all familiar with. We know them. We see them every day. So when we think about, you know, a name, a logo, a slogan, an image, that's all part of what a brand is. So easily we could think about Coke or we could think about Apple.
Sure.
As brand.
Yeah, I think of cereal or a software company. But why do countries need a brand? It's not a logo. It's not a motto. It's a brand. Why do countries need them?
Okay, so you just asked the question, why do they need to? Whether they want to or not, they have a brand, which is they have an image. So a brand really is an image, an association that people have in their mind that happens to be with a product, happens to be with – actually, Tom, you have a brand. You are on this radio show. You've got a brand. People know you. They know the station. Whether you want it or not, it's there. You introduced me as a professor at Wharton, which I am. Wharton's got a brand. Mm-hmm. So it's not, do we need to have a brand? We do have a brand. People have an image and an impression of what Wharton is, just as is the case for a country. So when we see products that come from a country, we have impressions about what those products are and how good they're going to be.
So let's ask the question this way then. What do you see America's brand as?
Interesting, because it's not a simple question. I mean, you ask it in a very straightforward and simple way, but it's a complex thing. If you said to me, what is Apple's brand? We'd have a whole set of dimensions that we would end up using, one of which would be innovative. If we said, what's America's brand? Your question, it's a whole series of different things. What you saw is I defined it across 65 different dimensions. Mm-hmm. But if you ask Dave, what's America's brand? One thinks about freedom, freedom of expression, freedom to do a lot of what it is that we want to do. And I think freedom is probably the single most dimension that we associate, that I associate anyhow, with America.
Now, earlier this year, you published a list of the 60 greatest countries on the planet now. And how did you rank these countries in terms of greatness? Now, was it more qualitative or was it more anecdotal?
It certainly was not anecdotal. It was, and not qualitative. It was quantitative. So what it is that I did was I conducted a survey globally. Actually, how is it companies do and measure their brands? They do a survey. Mm-hmm. What do people think about our brand and their impression of us? I did a survey globally asking similar questions that you would ask about products, but I asked it about nations. And so I asked a little bit more than 16,200 people around the world to rate countries on a set of 65 features. And I used those to come up with an assessment of each of these countries. I then weighted those features by how they are related to the economy of that nation, and then came up with an overall ranking.
Now, the U.S. is not ranked first on this list.
Ouch.
Yeah, and despite the fact we have the largest economy on the planet. And the idea that America is not the greatest country on the planet can be controversial. Pop culture is absolutely full of examples of this. And in the first episode of Aaron Sorkin's The Newsroom, a college student asks a panel what makes America the greatest country in the world. The same question that you asked with this survey. Well, at least which country?
It's a little bit different.
But you get the general gist. Two of the panelists gave pat answers. The third panelist, TV anchorman Will McAvoy, who's played by Jeff Daniels, veers off path. Let's take a listen.
Can you say why America is the greatest country in the world?
Diversity and opportunity.
Lewis?
Freedom. So let's keep it that way.
Will?
The New York Jets.
No, I'm going to hold you to an answer on that. What makes America the greatest country in the world?
Well, our Constitution is a masterpiece. James Madison was a genius. The Declaration of Independence is, for me, the single greatest piece of American writing.
One's a set of laws and the other's a declaration of war. I want a human moment from you. What about the people? Why is America
not the greatest country in the world, Professor? That's my answer.
It's not the greatest country in the world is what he said. Now, that was a fictitious professor. Professor Riebstein, you are not. And you, in fact, did not rank the U.S. as the greatest planet or greatest country on the planet. Where did it fall on your list?
So it fell number four. I will tell you, by the way, I did not know what the results were going to be when I launched it. And because of my roots being American and my centricity with the country, I anticipated America was going to be number one. The data said globally, how are we viewed? Not number one, but number four. And that caught me a little bit by surprise. Also, what caught me by surprise were the countries that were ahead of us.
Yeah, I was surprised by that, too. Number one on the list was?
Germany.
And then followed by Canada and the UK. Let's talk about Germany. What is it about Germany that makes it the greatest country on the planet, according to your survey?
So, you know, first of all, I think a lot of impressions that people have about countries are based on the products that come from those countries. Mm-hmm. So when we think of Germany, what I think about and what I think many people think about is German engineering, German cars.
It's BMW's motto, German engineering.
German engineering. Actually, there is a new razor company called Harry's Razors. And they advertise German made and German engineered. And I'm thinking, what's a razor? By the way, I have a beard and I know it's radio, so people don't get to see that. I don't relate very closely with razors. But what does a razor have to do with being engineered? But they feature German engineered. Like, okay, this must be a really precise blade. And that's what it is. And I think that's the image that a lot of us have. Secondly, I think it's economically, if you look at Europe, it's economically really, really stable.
It's the largest economy in Europe.
It's the largest economy in Europe. And I think being strong economically and producing products that work. And you mentioned BMW, you got to throw in Mercedes there as well, and Audi and Porsche.
But before the show started, we also mentioned another car maker. And I'm curious too, because this is a question about brands, and they seem to me to be, since it is a matter of perception, always on the verge of potential change. And that other automaker is, of course, Volkswagen. Do you think with the scandal that has come out over the past few months about Volkswagen doctoring its emission standard results, would that have affected Germany's brand in your survey?
Well, you raise it hypothetically. Mm-hmm. We're going to find the answer because I did this survey in which my best nations are ranked last year about this time. I'm redoing the survey, and my intent is to do this year over year over year. Since the survey was done, the Volkswagen scandal came out. I fully anticipate this is going to have an impact, not just on Volkswagen, but on Germany. So latest story that I read said that scandal is going to cost Volkswagen in the neighborhood of about $72 billion. But I think the impact on Germany is going to be much greater because we're going to see the German brand be negatively affected by that. And I think that's going to be fascinating. We're going to see the data. You're going to have me back on the show.
Done. Now, we will get back to America here in a moment, but I also want to bring up two other countries that made this list of the top 60. And there are, what, 190-something countries in the world. So you just focused on the top echelon. Number three, as we said, was the United Kingdom. And this came out before they voted by referenda to leave the European Union. How do you think that will affect these new rankings?
I think that's going to have a huge impact. I was in Europe at the time of the Brexit vote. It was fascinating. Mm-hmm. Actually, it was that day with Gordon Brown, the former prime minister of the UK. And I think that the Brexit vote is going to have – people are going to look at the UK as not a player, less of an of being present on the international stage, mm-hmm. As they're moving to more of an isolationist position. And I fully anticipate that's going to have an impact. Frankly, I can't wait to see what the latest ratings are going to be.
Now, there's another country that is far down the list, Germany and the UK above the United States, as was Canada. But coming in at number 26 is a country that has already had its scandals, that is still made your list of you know, almost the top 25, and that's the country of Greece. And I was fascinated by this because the economy is in shambles. You know, tourism gets interrupted on a frequent basis because of strikes due to the economy, and yet they were rated 26th. How?
Have you been to Athens?
Yeah, I have. I mean, it's beautiful, and yeah. I understand that, but it's just fascinating since the bulk of this conversation has been about the power of an economy, to have a country whose economy is effectively, we'll put it kindly and say, stalled.
So part of this, the rankings are economically based, but part of it is heritage and role that they've played. And it's hard to think about the heritage of civilization without thinking about Greece, mm-hmm. and the Acropolis.
And the Olympics.
And the Olympics. And there's a lot of people that still think of Greece very fondly and having a big role in sort of the world's evolution.
Now, at the base of this concept of a brand, and I'm assuming all of these things wrap in to make a national brand, or that brand impacts in some way these rankings. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely.
So why should the U.S. care how the rest of the world sees it?
Because it affects the U.S.'s economy. So what it is that I did is I measured what are the perceptions of each of these 60 countries, but then I said, how does that relate to the economy? And in particular, I tried to look at impact on the GDP, gross domestic product of the country, and within that, tourism, mm-hmm. foreign direct investment, that is other companies investing in businesses in the United States and other countries, mm-hmm. and foreign trade. And so I'll give you an example. Are people more likely to buy a product that happens to come from the United States than a product that happens to come from, you know, name the country, mm-hmm. Romania? We can see it when we think about shoes. Am I more likely to buy shoes that come from Italy or shoes that are from Bulgaria?
It might depend on your budget.
It might, but you'd be more willing to pay for those. If you just looked at that those two pairs of shoes and you said, they look identical to me, but one has made in Italy on it, you're going to think it's a little bit better just because it's made in Italy. Häagen-Dazs ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
Where's that from? Häagen-Dazs. Picture the name Häagen-Dazs.
Yeah.
Where's it come from?
I would assume Scandinavia.
Yeah, and they want you to assume that because Scandinavia is viewed as wholesome and healthy and everything. It's from New Jersey.
We'll continue our conversation with Dave Riebstein and get into perceptions and reality of American's brand. You're listening to Charlotte Talks here on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Piedmont Plastic Surgery and Dermatology, featuring plastic surgeons and dermatologists performing cosmetic and plastic surgery procedures and skin cancer screening, serving Charlotte, Hickory, Shelby, and surrounding counties. Details at ppsd.com. And from Creative Loafing, hosting Eat From a Truck with over 100 food trucks, Kids Zone, and live music Saturday at the Avid Exchange Music Factory. Details available at eatfromatruck.com. On this week's local news roundup, we'll have an update on the State Board of Elections, which is considering a controversial early voting plan for local election boards. We'll also discuss a $9 million pledge by super PACs to Richard Burr's Senate campaign, what that donation means for a tight U.S. Senate race, and we'll have an update on the Panthers playing the Broncos in a Super Bowl rematch. That's on the local news roundup tomorrow morning at 9 here on Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, a $20 million payout to settle sex harassment allegations at Fox News and the abrupt departure of longtime host Greta Van Susteren. What ongoing turmoil at the network may mean for journalism, TV news, and the conservative agenda.
That conversation on the Diane Rehm Show following Charlotte Talks from 10 to noon here on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
This is Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. I'm Tom Bullock in for Mike Collins. And this morning, we're talking America's brand with marketing professor Dave Riebstein of the Wharton School of Business. And you can also join the conversation, as always. Search for WFAE on Facebook and Twitter. And I want to get back to a point that you made just before the break. Haagen-Dazs, which I'm sure is designed to sound Scandinavian, is from New Jersey. Now, that tells me that brands are not just important, but they can be pirated, in essence, or piggybacked on.
Well, what's interesting about that particular example is the country of origin gives us an impression about the wholesomeness of the product. If I told you it was from Newark, New Jersey, Jersey ice cream, I don't think it would do nearly as well as if we think it's from Scandinavia and it must be, you know, this dairy country and very, very, you know, clean, et cetera. And by the way, the Scandinavian countries did amazingly well in my survey and were thought of very, very highly.
And was that largely because of quality of life?
Quality of life and actually these are two dimensions that we'll end up talking about as it relates to America, citizen of the world. And so they're viewed as being not just wholesome and safe places to live, which is part of the quality of life, but also that they care about the world and they care about our environment.
Well, we did place just above Sweden, so they're number five for now, hopefully.
For now.
So let's get back to this idea of brands. And as you just brought up with Haagen-Dazs, a brand does matter. They influence public opinion or the purchaser's opinion. And I'm going to go back to one more clip from pop culture, probably the most famous fictitious marketing man there is, Don Draper of Mad Men. And this is a conversation from the show between Draper and the developer of Madison Square Garden.
PR people understand this, but they can never execute it. If you don't like what is being said, change the conversation.
What is that conversation?
I was in California. Everything is new and it's clean. The people are filled with hope. New York City is in decay. But Madison Square Garden is the beginning of a new city on a hill.
So, Professor Riebstein, I'm going to ask you to put on your Don Draper hat. And if you were just given the United States or America's brand as a client, how would you market it? What would you do?
So, first of all, if I was going to be a smart marketer, I want to turn to the data. Mm-hmm. And I want to see what the data says about what it is we should do. And I'll answer your question as it relates to that data. What's interesting to me, and, you know, it's dangerous to talk about current political situation, but we have Trump, who's talking about make America great. So he's talking...
Make America great again.
He's actually addressing your question, except he doesn't say how. And so I think what as a marketer I would do is I'd say, well, let's turn to the data and see what it is that we can do. And I'll tell you what the data says. The United States does not do as well as I would expect and that it should in terms of quality of life and citizenship. Those would be two of the primary dimensions that really have an impact on GDP, on the role that a brand has with the economy. And that the United States falls down on. Quality of life, where specifically is an issue of safety, and that's one of them. An issue of income distribution is another aspect of that. which is really interesting. And citizenship, you know, we view ourselves as, you know, world leaders, but the world doesn't view us in terms of leading sort of the clean air movement, that we've sort of been resistant and if not a major resistant to some of the changes of trying to clean the environment, but also a major contributor.
So to greenhouse gases.
To greenhouse gases.
Now, I'm curious, though, when you say citizen or citizenship, you don't mean in terms of what makes an American legally an American. You're talking about citizenship in the world, correct?
Yeah, a good clarification, because today and in today's climate, we're, mm-hmm. there's a lot of focus on the meaning of citizenship within this country. This is citizen of the world, citizen of Earth. And how are we contributing to Earth's well-being?
And just to take a different point of view on that, America for a long time has kind of, whether rightly or wrongly, seen itself as world police in essence. It's the people who go in to fight for a cause. Not everybody always agrees with those causes, and those causes aren't always just, but that is the role that the American military has played. And how does the data show the world perceives the United States from that standpoint?
Yeah, it's a great question, by the way. And one of the things that I want to end up doing is I want to eventually get to a stage where I could end up writing an article that says the cost of war, where we talk about the cost of war not being just in terms of our military cost and the human life cost, that both in terms of military as well as civilian lives that are lost, but also the cost in terms of the image for that nation. And as you said, it could be positive as the police of the world.
Say after World War II, I'm sure the brand would have increased.
I'm sure after World War II it went up. There's also a potential negative that the United States engages in wars with the United States' interest, not necessarily other people's interests in mind. I don't know what the results of that are going to be, but you can imagine that not everybody views the United States' willingness to wield its power as all favorable.
So we're talking America's brand with marketing professor Dave Riebstein of the Wharton School of Business. And I want to go to a question from Chris on Twitter. His question is, America is not about pride anymore. It's about what's in it for me. For example, he notes the gap between those making minimum wage and CEOs. And that seems to go back to your idea with quality of life.
Absolutely. So one of the things I talked about is income distribution and this huge gulf between, you know, the minimum wage employee and the CEO and the and stated otherwise, the haves and the have-nots. Mm-hmm. And it is some of how we within this country, you know, have to deal with and how we view sort of the fairness, but it's also how the world looks at us.
And how do they see that wage inequality? Because by no means is the United States the only country with a wage gap. It's easy to point to places like Brazil or China with significant wage gaps. But how does the world see?
So we're not the only ones that are rated poorly on that. But we are rated not as the best on that. That is for sure. So again, you know, I don't want to paint this as the United States is absolutely the worst on this mm-hmm. dimension. But we keep thinking, boy, if we're not number one, if we're not the best on this dimension, there's something wrong. Well, there's we'll go back to Sweden, actually, or Canada.
Mm-hmm. Which was number two on your survey.
Canada's number two. Think about how in the world can our northern neighbors be viewed as number two? What have they got over the United States? Well, they're viewed as very safe. They're viewed as very, very clean. They're viewed as more gender equal, which is interesting. And they're also viewed as having more income equality. All of those dimensions, they do much better than the United States as viewed by citizens of the world.
More tolerant?
More tolerant.
Well, let's talk about tolerance here, excuse me, in North Carolina. We are, of course, home to one of the most controversial bills or laws, I should say, in the country, House Bill 2. And House Bill 2 does many, many things, but most people know it as the bill that requires that people use the restroom, locker room, shower facility, whatever public facility it is that corresponds to the sex on their birth certificate. There is a huge debate right now, a little bit down the ballot at the governor's level, as to whether or not House Bill 2 is hurting North Carolina's economy, and I'm guessing in essence its brand, or whether it's irrelevant to North Carolina's economy and brand. I'm curious what you think about this.
So I've heard of this bill. Yeah, so I'm kidding when I say that, because obviously there's been tons of publicity about it. I think if it had gone sort of under the radar, it wouldn't have had much impact at all. But it's had so much publicity on a national forum that everybody has heard about House Bill 2. And everybody knows, oh, yeah, that's the state that's not particularly tolerant. And I think there's no way that it could be said that this has not had a negative impact on a North Carolina's brand. Yeah, absolutely has to be the case. Now, recognize brands have different meanings to everybody. It's not like there is a brand that, you know, is pervasive for all consumers in the world. Some people look at a Mercedes and think, oh, man, that's at the top of the line. And some people think, well, that's way overpriced and it's German and I don't like Germany. And there's going to be this heterogeneous view about that. If we looked at House Bill 2, there's going to be some people and say, finally, somebody who is standing up for their rights, you know, and holding the line. And it's about time there's a state that took a position on that. But I think the majority of people around the country, not within the state, around the country are saying, man, there's this whole movement that's going on. It is being more tolerant. You introduced this topic around the topic of tolerance. There's this movement of being more tolerant of gender identity. And North Carolina is laggard on that. And so we see the impact in terms of, you know, the All-Star Game. Mm-hmm. We see the, you know, some businesses that say, wait a minute, I'm not sure I want to locate here. And some resistance just to the state.
But the Governor Pat McCrory, is running for re-election, who signed House Bill 2 into law, says it is irrelevant. He points to an employment rate that is below the national average and one of, if not the fastest growing economy in the United States. Does this brand or the impact of House Bill 2 have an actual tangible economic impact that's broader than, say, the 400 jobs that PayPal pulled out of Charlotte or Deutsche Bank saying that they're not going to expand their facility in Raleigh?
Yeah. So it turns out, first of all, I have no data on this.
Sure.
And I tend to feel much more comfortable in my skin when I got data that I can rely on. So you're asking me to speculate on this. But what I can tell you is, you know, it is that the employment rate is higher here. I'll buy that data and say, well, look at the employment rate. It's great. What we don't know is how much greater it could have been.
Mm.
And so what we'd like to know is, has this had an incremental impact and a noticeable incremental impact on what that employment is? Has it had an incremental impact on what the economy is? The economy might be great. Could it have been greater?
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned those examples of some businesses that have pulled out. We talked about the All-Star Game not happening. The All-Star Game was going to bring in a economic boon, and it has had a negative impact. So I don't know how the governor, and again, I'm
not asking you to take sides in the political fight.
I'm void of data, but I don't know how the governor could take a position that said no impact, under the radar, not an issue.
What about cities? I mean, obviously, since we're talking about House Bill 2, there's a very fascinating thing here. You have North Carolina as a brand, and you have Charlotte as a brand. Am I right in that? Can you have a city with its own brand, and can that brand be different than the state?
So a lot of people have urged me to take my nation branding work and bring it to city brands, because it'd be really interesting to do. And it is not necessarily the case that a city brand is identical with the national brand or with the state brand or the national brand. Actually, you could think about different cities in different countries that are radically different. We just saw the Rio Olympics. Mm-hmm. Rio and São Paulo, very, very, very different. You played that clip and it was, there's California or Los Angeles and Hollywood, and there's New York. Those are two cities, very, very different images that exist. China, Shanghai and Beijing. Beijing's very much a governmental sort of city.
Mm-hmm.
Or we could think about Washington here, very much sort of monuments and, you know, government. So cities have different images than other cities within the same country. and do not necessarily align perfectly with the particular country.
But let's focus between the state and the city. I mean, it is Charlotte, North Carolina. And when it comes to House Bill 2, these two entities took very drastically different tacks on the issue. You have Charlotte, who passed the ordinance that allows, you know, a transgender individual to use the restroom or facility of their choice. You have the state that said, nope, that's not going to happen. And that's what's getting the bulk of the national headlines. Can Charlotte itself create its own brand apart from North Carolina?
So I believe that Charlotte's brand may even be greater than North Carolina's brand. It may be that people have more identity and recognition of Charlotte than even North Carolina. Again, I don't have the data, so I can't say that specifically, but it could be that they're very, very separate. The bad news, HB2 has been publicized nationally, and as we said, everybody's familiar with that. That applies to North Carolina. Charlotte's part of North Carolina. And some of that broad brush is going to be applied to Charlotte. There's going to be a large part of the people that haven't read the local paper to know that, wait a minute, Charlotte's taking a different position on this issue. And so, unfortunately, I think that Charlotte is going to be painted by some of the North Carolina brush.
We're talking brands, America's brand, North Carolina's brand, now Charlotte's brand, with marketing professor Dave Riebstein of the Wharton School. We'd love to hear from you. If you have questions, you can find us on Twitter. You can email Charlotte Talks. We're also on Facebook as well. So let's step away officially from House Bill 2, but let's say you have a damaged national brand. How do you go about fixing that? And just to move us away from having you step into a political mess here in North Carolina as far as House Bill 2, let's talk about the UK again. Let's talk about the Brexit vote, because, again, your study was originally done before that vote. How do you rebuild the concept of a brand?
So it's a very interesting issue. We can even relate it back to Volkswagen. How did they rebuild their brand? How did BP, British Petroleum, start to rebuild their brand, because their brand was so badly damaged by the spill in the Gulf. And they spent a lot of time and a lot of effort doing that. We typically think that a brand is built by advertising. It's all Mad Men, do the advertising.
Sure.
It starts with what we do, what our behavior is. And so the way that we try and rebuild a brand is and as it applies to the specifics of HB2, we start showing, you know, all the positive things that are going on in the state. And I say showing, we start doing a bunch of the positive things, and then we need to communicate that that's what it is that's going on. And how is it that the state is progressive? And so we want to counter this perspective that maybe the state is not progressive, maybe it's not tolerant, with all the things that make North Carolina and Charlotte progressive. Brexit or the UK, they need to talk about, wait a minute, how tolerant is the UK? Because Brexit, part of it was non-tolerance as well.
Sure, refugees were a key issue.
All the refugees, this is an issue. Well, in what way is the UK very tolerant? And one of the questions is, how vibrant is the economy of the UK? And there's this fear of all these businesses that are going to be leaving London to go to other parts of Europe so they can deal within the EU. That's going to be part of the issue. That's what they need to do, is stress that.
All right. Our conversation with Professor Dave Riebstein continues after a short break. You're listening to Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Tyndall Subaru Gastonia, featuring the 2016 Outback with EyeSight safety technology that sees problems and initiates action to help avoid trouble. Details at TyndallSubaru.com. Support also comes from Blumenthal Performing Arts, presenting Celtic Thunder's new show Legacy, performing music, dance, and comedy featuring authentic Irish stage sets and instruments. Tickets available at BlumenthalArts.org. On today's Diane Rehm Show, a $20 million payout to settle sexual harassment allegations at Fox News and the abrupt departure of longtime Fox host Greta Van Susteren. What ongoing turmoil at the network may mean for journalism, television news, and the conservative agenda. That's coming up with the Diane Rehm Show in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock here on 90.7 WFAE. If you'd like to join our conversation about America's brand, join us with an email, charlottetalks@wfae.org. Reach us on Twitter @charlottetalks or on Facebook at WFAE.
As more and more information comes to us, the need for the substantial context and perspective that WFAE delivers has become essential, especially as our nation prepares to elect a new president and reacts to breaking news and ongoing issues from around the world. As you listen to WFAE today, we hope you will consider supporting the strength and independence of the station with a donation of any amount. Call 704-549-9000 or donate online at WFAE.org now. Thanks.
This is Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. I'm Tom Bullock, and we're talking brands, America's brand, North Carolina's brand, with marketing professor Dave Riebstein from the Wharton School of Business. And as always, we'd love to hear from you. You can email charlottetalks@wfae.org or search Charlotte Talks on Facebook and Twitter. And one of the things I love about this job are the random conversations we often have during those short breaks. And Professor, you just brought up something I hadn't thought about, and it's fascinating because today is the start of the NFL season, where I almost called them the Charlotte Panthers. The Carolina Panthers are playing the Denver Broncos, and you believe that sport plays a major role in the brands of both countries, I guess all three, countries, cities, and states. Explain how.
Absolutely. And actually, North Carolina should really know that, you know, first of all, the Carolina Panthers, mm-hmm. and it really helped put Carolina more on the map. I think it highlighted the state. But I'll give you a specific data point I can tell you. You've got two great basketball universities here.
Mm-hmm. Duke. Well, NC State fans. I know where you're going with this. NC State fans and Wake Forest fans
may
disagree.
I got to be careful. So there's more. But what I will tell you is when UNC or Duke win a national championship, and I guess my memory is long enough that I can remember NC State winning a national championship, but when any university wins a national championship, basketball, football, Villanova, which mm-hmm. is a couple miles from my home, just won the NCAA basketball tournament, applications go up. Wow, that Villanova, that's going to be a great school to go to. Applications go up. Applications go up for any school when they do well in sports. We just saw the Olympics. They just ended a couple weeks ago. It will have a huge impact on people's impression about Brazil. I've been to Brazil 8 times, but most people have not been to Brazil. Mm-hmm. You get to watch the Olympics and go, wow, that's a beautiful city. And you have all these festivities that are going on, and they pull it off amazingly well, given how last minute so much of it was. I guarantee there's going to be a boon to tourism for Brazil based on the fact that they had the Olympics.
I'm going to disagree with you there and challenge you with this point. There was no boost or boom in tourism at Sochi, the last side of the Winter Olympics.
So it doesn't always happen. And first of all, the Winter Olympics, very different than the Summer Olympics. Mm-hmm. The amount that people watched the Winter Olympics is very different than the Summer Olympics. And I'm not sure if you said that just out of speculation or you have any data.
No, actually, it's data, yeah.
There is data on that.
I believe so.
So what I will tell you is that countries invest in having the Olympics because they believe it's going to be good for their economy, that China really got a boost from the 2008 Olympics, for sure. I don't think the UK got much. Mm-hmm. I guarantee that Brazil is going to get something. That ends up happening. Why was it important for Charlotte to host the All-Star Game? Well, not just the people that were going to come in at that time and the temporary boost, but people discovering. I mean, actually, this trip for me down to Charlotte has been, wow, I can't believe how Charlotte has grown and all the wonderful things that are happening here. It's really amazing. And the likelihood of people coming back and wanting to think about coming here, It has an impact, not to mention just the visual impression that people have in the city. And the blimp plays a role. Mm-hmm. We get to see the city and all the lights, and that now has been lost with the All-Star Game. But be it any time there's a sports activity, it has an impact on that city, on the state, on the nation. And actually, what's interesting is to think about how many medals are won. Mm-hmm. Does winning have an impact on the impression of those countries as well? And it's part of why countries work so hard to do well, is not just for national pride, but also how it influences other people's views of those countries.
So let's get back to the political aspect of brands, since both major party candidates for president have made America's brand, in essence, an issue. I don't want to talk about individual candidates. I want to talk about the institution of the United States president and its brand. Regardless of your political affiliation, whichever way anybody sways, it is an undeniable point of data that we have the two least popular major party candidates in modern history vying for that office. Is the institution of the American presidency's brand potentially about to take a hit?
I think without a question. I think without a question that the institution of the presidency, as you've termed it, has been damaged. And unfortunately, part of what happens in the political process in this country is we've gotten reinforcement that saying negative things about other candidates works better than saying positive things about what we're going to do. And the negativism that happens in U.S. elections is overwhelming. And I think it hurts the impression that we have, that the world has about the institution of the presidency of the United States, without a question.
We just got a question in from Dennis on Facebook. He asks, what about Japan, going back to national brands? The most dependable and popular cars are Toyota, Honda, Nissan, and so on. I haven't heard Japan mentioned. They have the bullet train and a lot of engineering success. Where does Japan rank?
So Japan, it's really interesting, by the way, and it sort of illustrates a nation's brand, just like any brand with any company, a nation's brand can evolve over time. So I've got enough gray in my beard that I can say that Japan's brand used to be relatively poor.
Mm-hmm. And I remember U.S. automakers kind of scoffed when the first Japanese cars came to market.
Yeah, I mean, they're only going to be at the bottom of the food chain down there. And, okay, let them take the cheap automobiles and we'll still do the luxury. And they have moved upward and upward and upward. And the Japan brand has really grown. Now, I haven't been doing this for decades, so I can't tell you, mm-hmm. you know, year over year over year what's happened. My guess is that the Japan brand probably peaked sometime in the 90s, maybe in the late 90s that we have. And while Japan continues to make great cars, they're not as much viewed as the overall leader. They used to be the electronics mm-hmm. Capital. Sony's brand has sort of stagnated and declined some that we see. And so with the brands of some of those products has been the impact. But Japan, I don't remember what the specific ranking.
I think it might have been ninth, but I could be wrong on that.
I believe it's in the top 10. I thought it was ninth or 10th. My guess is if I had done this 10, 15, 20 years ago, it would have been higher. But it's still considered one of the best. And it's also considered to be really great as a place for entrepreneurship, which caught me a little bit by surprise.
Yeah, given the corporate culture, that catches me by surprise as well. I want to go to Harris's question on Twitter. America's brand is generic. We have lost all the uniqueness. Drive town to town, it's the same big box corporations over and over. Your thoughts on that?
True and not true. You know, so we just got done talking about, well, L.A. is very different than New York. You can still go. So part of it is, boy, you go and every corner's got a Starbucks and we find McDonald's everywhere and we see some commonality. And actually, that's not just happening within America. That's happening globally as we're losing some of the differences that exist. So that's the true part of it. Yet we also say there are these differences that absolutely exist. And some of that, you know, persists. But I think as the world flattens, so does the country. And there is some, you know, more commonality. So I think in general, that point is correct. There is an overall sort of aspect. But you can't tell me that Miami is identical to Minneapolis. Some of those differences still exist.
Harris's question brings up another really interesting point about marketing. When it comes to a national brand, America's brand, who is the audience? I mean, who? That question was clearly geared domestically, and you were talking earlier about how America is viewed overseas.
Yeah, so some people say, I don't care what other people think in other countries. I only care within the United States. And it is, and by the way, during the current election, my guess is that the two candidates most care about what people here in the United States think.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, they're the voters.
They're the ones that are going to vote, and that's what it is they have to appeal to. The reason I focused on a global perspective is because globally, it affects our economy. And so our ability to get tourism, which is a big part of our economy, our ability to sell products that are made in the United States is a big part of our economy. And our ability to attract foreign investment, huge. And it's influenced by, you know, what do you think about the education level of the workforce? What do you think about the ease of doing business? What do you think about the corruption mm-hmm. that might exist? All of those things end up influencing that. And what about the safety when you come to this country? Those are all things that play some particular role. So I am concerned about the global perspective and not just the local. Yet I understand we got to make sure everybody here within the country feels positively about the country too.
Sure. Brian emails, being from the Delaware Valley, there's a great difference between North Carolina and Charlotte. The majority feel the state falls into rural, basically generally backwards thought and ideas, while Charlotte seems disconnected, very progressive and fast growing with a different persona. That goes back again to your point about possibly Charlotte's brand being greater even than North Carolina's brand.
That's right. So, I mean, again, one could say, you know, all I care about is just what the North Carolina thinks or even what Charlotte thinks about itself. And the question is, how is it affected by what broader than the boundaries of the city and state are that play a particular role here? And I think that is indeed part of it. To this issue, I think that when you live within the state, you might think, well, Charlotte's very separate from North Carolina. When you're outside of the state and you're living, you know, in Wyoming or California, Charlotte and North Carolina are seen somewhat in the same light. You know, it's still that same place that, you know, has all of what its particular history has been and what its current policies are.
I want to go back to a second. We've talked about the brand of the American presidency, the institution itself. We've talked about America's brand. I'm curious, too, about this. This is a very polarizing election here domestically at the presidential level. And it seems that politics is becoming more and more siloed, and therefore the country seems itself more polarized. Did that show up? I mean, you did this study, you know, last year into this year. The primary season was, I mean, let's face it, the presidential election started in you know, 4 years ago.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Does this kind of polarizing political discourse, if you want to call it that, in the United States, is that having a direct impact back on America's brand itself?
Actually, with no question. And you know, so I've spent a lot of my time traveling around the world and talking to people in all corners of the world. And what I will tell you is there's lots of people that see what's going on in the United States and think this is very divisive. I mean, we feel it here mm-hmm. for sure. It's also felt abroad. And all the time I'm asked, what's going on there? Well, you know, it seems crazy what's happening within the U.S. political system. So I'm doing the study again, as I mentioned. Mm-hmm. I'm supposed to be doing it right now. Instead, I thought, no, I'm going to go to Charlotte. But I've postponed when I'm going to do this study until November 9th. And so I want to know what it is that the world's perception is of the U.S. after the election. Ideally, what it is that I would have done is I would have done it now and then repeated it again after the election so I could see how it changed specifically related to the election. But it's a very costly study, both in terms of time and money. And so I've decided November 9th is when I'm going to field with the survey. And we will see what the net impression is. Hopefully what's going to happen is the dust is going to settle. The battle is over. Now let people view us as a calmer, you know, with one leader rather than as divisive as it is. And with the full Supreme Court. I had to throw that
in. Of course. I don't mind at all. But just to play devil's advocate here, the United States is still the largest economy on the planet. It will be on November 9th. The United States still has the most powerful military on the planet. It still will be November 9th. The United States is still one of the major brokers on the world stage, both in terms of entertainment, political power, influence makers. These are all things that you're studied. Do you really think that it's going to have that much of a direct impact?
The election?
Yeah.
As you said, those things aren't going to change. And by the way, you weren't playing devil's advocate. You are a devil's advocate. Okay? But those things are not going to change. Those are going to remain. But there are aspects that I think, interestingly, it should not be ignored that, you know, Mrs. Clinton is a woman. Mm-hmm. There are going to be some people that think, oh, finally, the United States has elected a woman. There's lots of other countries, mm-hmm. leading countries, and all sorts of different countries that have had women mm-hmm. In leadership. Germany, Merkel,
yeah.
You know, the prime minister happens to be a woman. Margaret Thatcher, decades ago.
Sure.
You know,
Bhutto in Pakistan,
Gandhi
India.
And you could go through the list of them. There's a whole bunch of them that have been there. There's going to be some aspect of you know, there's going to be more gender equality that comes. I think the election's going to have an impact. Absolutely.
Interesting. Well, that's all the time we have this morning. Professor Dave Riebstein is a marketing guru with the Wharton School of Business. I want to thank you for coming down to Charlotte, and good luck on your study.
Tom, thank you very much. Lots of fun, and enjoy being here in Charlotte.